Attention, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea.
Broadcasting from the rock and roll bomb shelter, surrounded by radioactive biscuits and the world famous Rock Ops, located 40 feet beneath the radio station. It's the
Big Fat American Rock Show.
With your host, the Doc of Rock,
the Professor,
everyone's favorite mad music magician,
Crazy Uncle,
and your best friend in the whole wide world, Zach Martin, New HD, where rock lives.
It's Zach Martin on the Big Fat American Podcast. I'm with C.W. Haynes, who is an author out of Woodstock, Georgia. Is the basic premise of this book, CW?
It goes back to when I was about 13 or 14, which was 1969 or 1970. One of my best friend's dad told us a story about three men that went into a cave and they found a pit with a log laying across the pit with a hair rope going down into it. So they lowered one of the men down into the pit, and at about 40 feet, he hit a ledge. And of course, back then, carbide lights was about it in 23 and 27. So he's shining his light around and he sees another cave entrance, and he hollers up and says, there's another entrance down here. And so he looks in and he sees Spanish helmets, breastplates, muskets, clothing, a lot of artifacts. And so he picked up his mask that was at the entrance of the cave, and he dusted it off. And when he did, he started hearing voices and the room started going. So he threw it down and he started screaming, pull me up, pull me up. And so they pulled him up and he said, when his feet hit the cave floor, he ran out of the cave 5 miles back across the mountains and the streams. They couldn't catch him. And when they got to him, he was in the floorboard of the car in the back of it with a blanket pulled over him. And when they coaxed him out of the car, he was white as a sheet, and he told them what happened. He said, I'll never go in that cave again as long as I live. So that was the basis of it. And I was sitting at work in Richmond, Virginia, in DuPont, and that story came back to me, and I just had a moment, so I'm going to take a break. So I started taking notes on post-y notes, and so I said, one of these days, that should make a good book. I'm going to write a book about it. And that was in 1987.
Oh, okay. So this has been in the back of your mind or part of your thoughts for half a century. Yeah. Almost, well, 40 years at least.
40
right?
years, yeah. Yeah.
When did you start writing the parts on post-it notes? In 1987?
1987 is when I had post-it notes at work, and I had post-it notes at home, you know, then I just kind of put them all together and said, one of these days, you know.
One of these days.
Because I was working 10, 12 hours a day in engineering, so it was kind of hard, but I thought it would make a good book.
How were you able to keep track of all the post-it notes? I don't know about you, but I'm kind of like organized, but not very well organized, and I hold on to things for a very long time. For instance, you know, some of the shirts that I wear all the time, I realize today in my shoes, 15, 20 years old. I really don't get rid of many things. I'm not a pack rat.
I'm not too far from that, Zach, because I think I've got you beat. I have a shirt that I still have that's left from 1976.
Well, that's cool. I had a shirt that had all different colors on it from the 80s, and I got married and I held on to it till one day it disappeared. My wife didn't like it. She threw it out.
Yeah, well, of course, I no way I can wear it anymore. Being I'm 200 pounds.
Yeah, so, well, I understand that. Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I understand where you're coming from. But what to answer your question is, I got a Manila envelope and I just started putting them together and then just started putting them in it and in a folder, put it in a folder, and said, actually, the name of the book then was Spirit Cave, Secrets of Spirit Cave. Uh-huh. And I thought, there's got to be a better name than that. So when I actually did get around to start writing it in 2003, when computers came out, I said, oh, now it's going to be easy. I can type and not write. So that's kind of when it started. And that's when I changed the name of it.
Well, I noticed that we talked before we got started with our interview. You have your dream catcher, the walking stick behind you. You got your cowboy hat. Mm-hmm. You're descended from Cherokee people. Mm-hmm. How much of your ancestry, how much of your experiences growing up how much of, I guess you would say that your bloodline, how much does all of those things influence your writing? And maybe did any of the your background as far as growing up and being Cherokee, did it have something to do with the terrific characters and the mystical moments that are part of Grandfather's Journal?
Yes, it does, because I had, you know, lots of stories handed down from my mother, but my dad was Osage, so he taught me how to hunt and fish and live off the land, and taught me how, you know, when it's like, you know, shape-shifting is, I have some of that in my book, and it's like, if you've ever hunted, and I don't know if you have, Zach, or if you know people, that you can be with somebody and you can look out in the woods and you can say, look, there's two deer coming through the woods. Mm-hmm. And the other one sitting, and they're not 20 yards from you. And the guy sitting next to you says, where? I don't see them.
Right.
And they never see it. They walk right on by and it's like, they're right there. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, because of, you know, my dad and my mom and all the stories, and it just, the way they were treated, I've always been intrigued, and I've had to teach myself a little bit of the Cherokee language, but, you know, because I wanted it to be part of it. That's why part of this book has words in Cherokee, like wado is thank you. And Cherokee didn't have a word for bye. It was until we see each other again, which is dono digo honi. So I have trained and learned and studied and I do a lot of research before I ever write, make sure that it is coherent with their beliefs.
I like the fact of not saying goodbye to people. I have a nephew who could never bring himself to say goodbye. If only we knew the Cherokee expression like that. That's a beautiful thing.
Right. And I have started using that. And I had a brother-in-law passed away in June. Mm. And I went and seen him in April. And I actually, instead of saying bye to him, I knew I wouldn't see him again, but I said, until we see each other again. And I said, don't know day go haunt me, because he's read my book and he understood.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, you mentioned that how you used the phrase, how you were treated. Mm-hmm. Let's bring that to the surface a little bit. Cause I think that how we're treated, you can use it as a positive or go in a negative direction. So
right.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, I use it in a positive, you know, because I mean, there's enough negative in the world. We all know that. So it's just, you know, they were forced from their homes, but they went and then they created a life into what them was, you know, the Great Spirit, because he's in everything and everything is from him. So he's in the rock, he's in the water, he's in the trees, he's in the tree leaf. And when they take an animal, it's to feed you. So they're giving thanks to the Great Spirit. So they had a really good understanding of one God, and he was in everything, and he gave them everything. So they didn't dwell so much on what they had done to them. They still gave their thanks to him for feeding them and giving them life.
Growing up, I guess there's probably not too many years between us.
I was born in 56.
Okay, so I was born in 64. Not really too many years. Okay,
not too many. No,
eight years. Long time.
Right.
But that means that we grew up around the same people. The World War II vets.
Yes.
By World War II veterans.
Yep.
I watched Gunsmoke and Bonanza and Andy Griffith, which is
Lone Ranger.
The Long Ranger, I just couldn't make a connection with that. But
yeah,
whole Tonto thing, and I guess over the years, now we're not even allowed to watch the Long Ranger, I guess.
It's I don't know. I'm still watching him because he still comes on.
I mean,
it's, you know. Kemosabe means trusted scout.
So. You see, now, thank you for bringing that up, because I got in trouble from a program director when I had a nationally syndicated show. I go, Aloha Kemosabe, right? When I would get on it. That was taken from a guy named Dan Ingram, who did afternoons here in New York on the radio for many years on ABC and then later CBS-FM. And it was my homage to my late friend Dan Ingram when I was Aloha Kemosabe. So I get an email, and I'm so glad that we could talk about this, because what a bunch of pricks, okay?
Yep, I agree.
They're just trying to find ways to get rid of me. So here's the email from a guy up in Maine.
Uh-huh.
We find that the use of Aloha Kemosabe is offensive to indigenous people. And I responded, I'm like, I just have one question. First and foremost, I don't see how, but I would like to know what indigenous people are up in your part of Maine that you feel that they would be insulted by the use of Aloha Kemosabe. I'm confused by this.
Right.
And they had no answer. I think that people really, this whole cancel culture, woke culture, and I don't think it does much when you're not part of the group that all of a sudden you're making the decisions for how the group should think and feel based on your perception.
Probably didn't even know what Kemosabe meant. How can you say something offended you if you don't even know what it means?
What it means. If you think it means something bad, then won't you tell me what you think it means, you know?
Right.
All right. So yeah. Aloha Kemosabe, I thought was like, hey, that's really kind of cool because what I'm honoring is traditions of indigenous people, whether they're Hawaii or Native American.
Right.
So anyway, right. I find that
I'm with you on it.
But so these shows also at the same time.
Right.
Gave us really, I think, the wrong impression of indigenous people.
Hollywood has a tendency to want to change things a little bit, in my opinion, which right. is small.
I can just imagine, look, if you're of a people and you're presented as something that's way off of mm-hmm. what your people are, that's offensive. Right.
For sure.
So, although sometimes it's so over the top, you can't help but laugh. How about F Troop? Remember? The beautiful part of that is that all the guys that are the foils are the ones causing all the troubles. They got, you know, O'Rourke and you got Screaming
yep.
Eagle and,
yep.
and they're all working together on the same side.
Together and coaching yeah. each other, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that I think yep. was a great way to it have was, fun
yeah.
with.
Oh yeah, that was a fun Western, to be honest.
Right, we're yeah. all in on it, you know.
Yep, yep.
That's fantastic. The book, apparently, and yep. I haven't yep. read through everything. I oh, there you go.
There.
Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, well, there's so much to talk about. Okay, great.
I did the artwork.
Oh, you did? That's what yeah. I was going to ask. That's
I did the artwork. It took me like four times
50 years.
good, I like that. It took me four times to get it back to Yorkshire. Because their artists kept coming back. And the first time they brought it back to me, let's see if I can get it up here where you can see it.
Yeah.
All right. Can you see the little bitty part of the house?
Yeah.
That's all that was on the book.
That would make no sense, right?
This little bitty portion right here.
Right, right.
And I said, wait a minute. I said, that's not what I actually drew this just like this and sent it to him. I said, where's the rest of the house? I said, this house has been in the family for 300 years. It's a 4,000 square foot house.
Wow.
That little bitty thing you got is not even 600 square feet. So they sent it back and did it again. I got this. And it's still, if you notice, there's no handrails on the top rail or the bottom.
Right.
Which I had in there. And in this book, I have a 1932 Ford truck that, the character, the grandfather is.
Oh, so you have an F1.
Yes.
Right. All right.
Yes.
No. All right.
It was supposed to be. It was supposed to be in the driveway, and they left that out. And they said, "Well, you want us to redo it?" Oh, and it also had a dock and a boat, and then the White Eagle, which is one of the characters in the book, was standing on the boat dock. And it's like, I don't have a boat dock drawn in there, and I don't have a boat floating 10 feet out away from it, tied to a rope. You know, a White Eagle is standing on the bank. And I said, no, you just take the boat dock out, put him on land and forget the truck. Cause I don't want to spend another 6 weeks trying to redo it. Cause every time I gave it to him, it was like 4 to 6 weeks before I'd get it back.
Let's face it, to people yeah. who love their cars, screwing with an F1 with an artist who might not know what he's doing, it
yeah.
will only piss people off. I mean, you have to get the 1932 F1 correct. Nobody will pay attention to the rest of the book if they're fixated on, this is not what it's supposed to look like, right?
Right. There you go. Yeah, and then those are just...
Was this your grandfather's truck?
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, most of the book... fictitious,
okay,
but it is on life that I have lived. So I gave the character Jacob, which I guess you could say I kind of portrayed Jacob, And that the grandfather's name is Clarence James Cherhanes. So I combined two names. This is my pen name, and I'll admit that. The C is for my dad, Clarence. The W is Wayne for my middle name, and Haynes was my mother's maiden name. So I used that to honor my father and my mother.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So, because they taught me about God. They taught me about Jesus. They taught me about right and wrong. They taught me how to hunt, how to fish. So I have to give them something.
I just like the way you say right, wrong, hunt, fish. I mean, you're my kind of guy.
I'm from the South. Sorry.
Well, yeah. Well, we have that sort of attitude in South Jersey. It seems right. Like that, you know, you don't even have to get to the Mason-Dixon line
right
before you get that kind of draw. And I'm from South Jersey, hunting, fish, and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I've lived all over the United States, so it's my accent's kind of muddled.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, one of the pleasures of being down south is John, you know what I'm saying?
You get to throw in y'all
and stuff like that, and you get the jaw, and, you know, and everybody is like making sure that you understand the difference between grilling and barbecuing, right?
Oh, yeah, there's a big difference.
The one thing I think that we all have in common, if you're in the Northeast or in the South,
mm-hmm.
we're all really good. Most of us, anyway, are good at fishing. I mean, I love fish.
Yep.
I mean, there's certain things that I see when I'm, you know, on the water that most people like in the woods would miss when the deer walks by. Now, we do have like a herd of deer that's living in the back of my house. We're 10 miles west of New York City, and we have a herd of deer in the backyard. How about that?
I'd be set up a game camera with video just to watch them.
Yeah, just to watch them.
Just to watch them, for any other reason. Because I had a ranch in Arkansas, and I used the cameras for that.
Yeah, see, it wouldn't be sporting. The deer in our neighborhood, just to let you know, are neighborhood pets. You do not hunt.
Right.
Deer that live in your neighborhood.
Oh, no.
That go in your backyard and maybe feed on your apples or some bread that you throw them. They're I hope people understand that you just don't
hit
them with a shotgun or hit them with an arrow just because you're like, I got a hankering for venison. You just
You don't do that around your home.
No, absolutely not.
There has to be somewhere else because, like you said, those you become to know and pet. So
yeah, they're your pet. They're the neighborhood pets, and we got little does and stuff like that. All right, great. So writing can be really overwhelming. I'm fascinated by writers because it takes so much effort and you really have to know what you're doing. What would you say is your secret? How is the process for you? What was the experience like?
It is a challenge from time to time because of life, you know, gets in the way. So when I get in, I just have to be in the mood and I can come in here and I'd sit down and read some of what I've written. And I sometimes I can just say, okay, great. And I can go on and I could write two or three chapters. And there's other times I can sit there and look at it for an hour and say, what am I going to say next? So you have to be in that right mental frame of attitude. And then sometimes if someone asks you about the book and then you start telling them about it, it gets you all excited. And you come in and you sit down and you start writing. It's like this one, the Grandfather's Journal in Search Of. I had 9 chapters written, and it had been sitting for several years. And my sister and my wife for 17 years told me, look, the book is good. You need to finish it. Well, we took a trip and down to Florida to visit a sister. And then when I came back, I had back surgery. So I had 2 more weeks before I went back to work. And I sat down and wrote 12 chapters.
Wow.
In 2 weeks.
That's so amazing.
It just hit me. I mean, and my wife could say, yeah, it did. And then I had other publishers that was interested, but Yorkshire was the one I decided to go with. And thankful to them and David Salador. I'm grateful to them and you, Zach, for this. I'm honored to be here.
Well, listen, it's great having you because this is fun for me. I like this is my kind of conversation because we really, even though we've never met before, it seems like we got a lot in common. We could probably sit around on the porch and BS for hours until we annoy everybody, right? Going to bed at 2 or 3 in the morning.
Amen.
Yeah.
Either that or pick up the rod and go down to the river and fish.
That would be pretty good. Yeah. Get some catfish.
Right from the
pond into the pan, you know.
There you go. You got it.
Now, even though it took you a long time, let's say altogether about, let's just call it 50 years to put this first book out, Grandfather's Journal, which is available on Yorkshire Publishing.
Right.
I understand that you're already, you're working on a sequel, and obviously, let's face it, you do not have 50 years to put this together, so.
No, I don't think I have that much long. No, I'm into chapter 9 right now, and I'll probably finish it this weekend, and chapter 10 will be coming along. So, and we just bought a home in Alabama, so here the next few weeks we're in the process of moving down near Mobile, so we'll be on the Gulf.
Oh, that's nice.
So, I'm hoping maybe January, February, the next book, which will the name of it is The Revelation.
Now, it seems to me, well, what's the basic theme? Is it a carryover from Grandfather's Journal?
Yes. Actually, there's a cliffhanger at the end of this book. And if you pick up the second book and you start reading, you think you're using the same chapter as this book.
It is called the sequel. So obviously, you know.
Yeah. I should have thought of that. Yeah, I made it where, you know, that when you read the last line, it's like, what do you mean? Where's the rest of it? And I have several things on Amazon, on Facebook. Like, why'd you stop it there? I mean, when's the next book coming? I'm ready for it now. So.
See, that's kind of brilliant, you know? Would you say that writing is your second career?
Yes, definitely. Right.
And do you intend to just retire from whatever you're doing and just concentrate on full-time writing? Is that what you want to do?
Well, I retired last year after getting laid off of engineering. So that's when I said, heck with it, and retired.
Yeah, I get you.
And then I said, you know, I love writing. You know, I've written songs and recorded them. And actually, there's a song in this book in chapter 19, which I actually wrote for my wife. Actually, I wrote it before I met her, and the song is called The Unreachable, because I'd been divorced, and it's like, I don't want another woman in my life. I've had, you know, too much trouble. So I said, that's it. So I was unreachable. And so, but I guess my subconscious, you know, I wrote it because it's like, yeah, I'm unreachable, but I would love to have the woman God meant for me to have, or the one that was, you know, we had a lot in common.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. It's almost like when you want something bad enough, you pretend like you're not interested.
Exactly. And that's where I was. And so I wrote this song in 2003. And then in 2005, in this book, there's a love story between Jacob and Catherine. So in chapter 19, Jacob plays the song, and it has the chords and everything. So you can actually pick the guitar up and you can play the song. So, you know, I think some books have songs, but they don't have the chords. So it's just words. So you don't even know what the melody is. Mm. So me, I put the chords in it. So you can play with the piano or guitar.
You know what? That's interesting. You just took a different direction along the literary trail, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of Grandfather's Journal and your sequel. And I'm getting a sense that and the song, I can almost picture some sort of like movie franchise or like what Disney Plus is doing with all the characters from Marvel Comics or Loki and, you know,
Winter Soldier,
whomever. Winter Soldier. That was fantastic.
Yep.
Do you think that this could be a nice Netflix movie series or some sort of, you know, Disney Plus kind of thing?
Well, from some of the ones I've seen, I would hope so, because some of them are not very good.
Really bad, yeah.
Bad. But I think I'm more humble than just saying, oh, yeah. But I've had a lot of people tell me that they think it would make a great movie. And I've had people that have told me they would make a great Netflix series.
Well, that's good.
I think that it could. And I think it would be really good. And because in my book, I also, I try to teach with lessons learned of like what we just talked about, right and wrong.
Yeah, the moral of the story.
Truth and justice, you know, good and evil. So there's a lot of spiritual things in my book about this world and the spirit world.
Right.
So White Eagle, of course, is from the spirit world. And him and Jacob meet and they do battle in this world and the spirit world through this book and the next book.
Well, this really sounds intriguing, to say the least. I have to tell you, man, I got a lot of respect for you, because You know, I like the tenacity. I like the fact that you're just like, you know, I'm going to do this, darn it. And then you turned lemons into lemonade when, you know, you get laid off. You're like, ah, screw this. I'm going to go do something else. I mean, you and I are like kindred spirits on that right. level.
That sounds good to me, Zach.
You know, it's better to be your own boss after a while, you know, and then you can make your own decisions. What part of Alabama? You're over by Mobile. And now you're in Woodstock, Georgia.
Right.
I think that, you know, there's sections of Georgia that are so pretty. When you go from South Carolina and I guess maybe Tennessee,
right,
there's this like little sliver on your way to Alabama. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I would love to live here. Because as soon as I got in Alabama, I was on my way to Dega, you know, to watch.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I saw these cabins and this little ponds. And I'm like,
oh, right,
man, I'd like to live here and just sit off the porch just fishing. I mean, that was going through my mind. I'm like, man, this is a great place.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that, you know, our country has so much going on. I mean, not the politics, not the COVID-19, not the
thing. Amen. This is a beautiful country.
That's what I'm getting at. The nature.
Yes.
It's got so much to offer.
Yes, it does.
You don't have to spend a lot of money to go experience something new.
Right.
Whether it's up in Vermont or Maine, as we talked about it, or even New York City. I mean, you can find amazing things in New York City, you know. But so that I just think this is great. I like the whole feel and sound and that what you've accomplished with this book. So hats off to you. Really? I know it's available on Amazon, right? You can get it on Amazon.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Books A Million.
How many times have you read your own book?
Just in getting it to where it's at a dozen times. And actually, I just read it again some last night, this morning, so that I could remember, because I'm so busy working on the second book and I have to go back to it
because
I got to make sure that, you know, the times and the dates. So every date that is in my book, if you look it up on the calendar, the year and the day
match.
The month, the date, all it matches down to, so you can look it up, then it's going to match.
Yeah.
And anything I write in the book, like parasympathetic nervous system treatments, which is something that his grandfather's teaching Jacob in the second book. You go look it up online and it'll teach you about it.
Oh, that's cool.
So, right. And you know, there's things called healing touch or energy healing. Some people call it. So I've studied it. So I actually have some of that. Actually, you know, where the grandfather is teaching Jacob to be rounded. And my daddy taught me something that was from Ezekiel. I can't remember the date. Anyway, he used to remove warts from people. And he would rub his hand on it, and it was out of the Bible from Ezekiel, I think it's 16:6. And it says, I saw you lying in your blood, your polluted blood. And I said, I saw you in your blood, and I said, live. Yeah, I saw you in your blood, and I said, live. So that was, it's right out of the Bible. And then 2 weeks later, the person's warts would be gone. And actually, if you look it up on Google and say, how do you remove warts? It'll go to Ezekiel 16:6.
All right, I'm looking right now.
I think it's Ezekiel.
Yes. As I passed by, I saw you defiled in your blood. So I said to you, let there be life out of your blood and multiply. I made you as a field in full bloom, and you multiplied, became great, and entered into great cities. Wow, this is great writing here. Your breasts were firm and your hair grew, but you were naked and behaved improperly. As I passed by and saw you, behold, it was your time, a time for lodging people. So I spread my wings over you and covered your shame and swore an oath to you. I entered into a covenant with you and you became mine, says the Lord. Then I washed you in water, washed away your blood, and anointed you with oil. I clothed you in embroidered garments with purple underneath. I dressed you with fine linen and covered you with a veil of fine silk. Is this the correct chapter here?
That's in part of it, but the one I'm looking for, like I said, this, I've drawn a blank on it. I'm sorry. I should have written it down. But
well, it, no, this is fun stuff. I mean, you can see
part,
like
it is still part of it because I use a lot of verses out of the Bible.
Yeah.
So that you can look it up. But it well, said, I saw you in your blood, in your polluted blood, like you said. And I said, until you live. Yea, I said, until you live. So basically, his blood was polluted. But the next time he says, and I saw you, you know, I saw you in your blood, it wasn't polluted any longer. So he cleansed it.
So yeah.
It goes on and on. So yes, it does.
I will tell you this: the one thing about the Bible, it covers all different types of literary, I guess, genres, right?
Yes, it does.
I mean, this chapter. I mean, it would make a grown man blush if you read this in church. I mean, I would
It would be a stutter through it.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think I'll read that next time I'm in church.
Yeah,
say that. Like, yeah, you can study that at home, kids.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, it was great talking to you, CW. We'll have to do this again, and especially when you get closer to releasing this, the sequel, and next time. Maybe what we can do is find another guest that we can bring into the discussion and talk about elements of your book. And also what I really would love to do is have some guests on that can talk about Native American stories and, you know, the Native American way and share that with people because it's really
exciting. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, sounds awesome.
Totally groovy. Awesome. Yeah. All right, CW, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sophia's mission inspires faith, hope, and charity to people living on the autistic spectrum and with disabilities. Sophia's, in association with New HD Media, creates meaningful opportunities and jobs for those with additional needs. Many of these jobs can be performed from home and are life-changing for neurodivergent and special needs communities. For more information, go to sophianewhd.org.
Follow BFA on Facebook at Big Fat American, Zach Martin on Twitter at Zach Martin Rocks, and Zach Martin on Instagram. Wait, Zach is on Instagram? I can guarantee he has no clue how to use that. See all the interviews and videos at ZachMartinRocks.com.